It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Abby Hornacek.
I'm Ben Domenech.
I'm Dana Perino, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. I'm Bill Hemmer. Less than 1 week before the 2022 midterm elections, Republican candidates are reportedly making major gains, and the GOP is projecting major confidence about taking control of Congress.
On issue after issue, what the people are talking about is, is my life better off than it was 2 years ago? And if the answer is no, then why would you vote for the people who are in charge?
I'm Lisa Brady. Republican midterm momentum has Democrats shifting gears.
The polling and also the money being spent right now suggests that Democrats are very concerned about races in very blue parts of the country, from California to Oregon.
And I'm Mark Thiessen. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
We stand less than a week before the midterm elections, and what was once considered to be a close election season has changed dramatically in the last 2 weeks. With poll margins widening in several key states, the Democrats have brought former President Barack Obama on the campaign trail to headline rallies in battleground states. Many see this move as an effort to avoid tying Democrats to President Biden as midterms draw near. With the president's approval ratings hovering in the low 40s and even 30s for the past several weeks. Election day is approaching fast, and control over Washington hangs in the balance, with many voters saying they trust Republicans the most on issues like the economy and crime. The GOP is projecting major confidence about their chances of taking power this election cycle.
Well, I think we're in a good position to take back the House.
Ronna McDaniel is the chairwoman for the Republican National Committee.
We need 5 seats to take back the House because of the great wins that we had in 2020, where we didn't lose a single incumbent in the House and picked up 15 seats in blue areas. So the House, we need 5 seats. 4 of those could just come from Florida, just to give you an example. The Senate's toss-up. Senate's neck and neck in Pennsylvania, in Georgia, in Nevada. We feel good about what we're seeing with Republican turnout, but it's all going to come down to Election Day, like every other election, which makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Broadly speaking, last week, just about every story written said the same thing. Republicans are on a roll. I don't know if that changes this week. However, I think we should be wide open to the possibility that the story swings back to the Democrats yet again. Do you see that happening or not?
I don't, because we were saying this all summer. The big issue was the economy. And Democrats really tried to shift it to abortion. They put millions and millions and millions of dollars behind abortion. And where did voters come back home to? The economy. That is the issue that is driving this election, because people are really hurting. In the Northeast, when they have home heating oil prices topping out at, in some cases, $7 a gallon, on top of gas prices being high, on top of inflation with groceries, with rent, with all the different things that people have to pay for, it is really causing an economic crunch for everyday Americans. And that is the number one issue driving this election. And people are holding the Democrats accountable for this because they have the Senate, the House, and the White House.
Now, Nevada, the early vote, dominated by Dems based on history. We are hearing anecdotally that they do not have the type of lead that you would normally expect. What are you hearing about Nevada today?
Similar in Nevada, Pennsylvania, Georgia, we're just not seeing the Dem turnout at the level that they've had in the past. Now, it doesn't mean that they're not going to turn out on Election Day, because habits have changed. And we're coming out of a pandemic where that election really you can't use as a model for 2022. And laws have changed as well, especially in Nevada. But what we're seeing anecdotally is not the same lead that they would have in Clark County. Usually the Democrats will go into Election Day with a sizable lead in absentee and mail-in voting. Democrats prefer mail-in voting. Republicans prefer Election Day voting. That's just a habit we've seen form over the past several elections. And we're just not seeing those leads build. But we have a week, so I'm not going to get overconfident.
There's going to be a lot of talk about Virginia, too. All right, that's a district, southeastern corner of the state. It's Hampton Roads. two good candidates. Elaine Luria won her contest 4 years ago. She's trying to keep her seat for a third time. She's being challenged by Jen Kiggins, a well-regarded Republican. Both women, by the way, have military records. The district has been redrawn to slightly favor the Republican. The reason I point to that race is because it's Virginia. They close at 7 o'clock and they count fast. Likewise, I would say for Florida 27, which is Miami, and Maria Salazar is running for re-election there as a Republican. How will she do? You can compare the numbers now to what she did 4 years ago when she lost to Donna Shalala. Granted, things are different now. However, you could still base an apples to, let's say, somewhat apples comparison. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but that's what I'm saying. Florida counts fast. That part of Florida closes at 7 o'clock. New Hampshire won. There's a really good House race there in the southern part of that state. We think New Hampshire counts pretty fast as well. Do you agree with those three on the table that I just put out there, or would you suggest others?
No, I do. I do agree. I think you're right to go to the states that vote that count fast. I mean, New York, you're not going to get a quick result, right? We know that. There's a lot of races in New York that'll be pivotal, but I think those are good races. I think Maria Salazar is a great one to look at to see if she wins overwhelmingly. I will say Florida in general, we have four potential pickups in Florida: Corey Mills, Aaron Bean, Laurel Lee, and Anna Paulina Luna. If we get those four, that means we're one away from taking back the House. Obviously, there's other races that are, you know, we're on the defense on and we're on the offense on, but just Florida alone can deliver, you know, the vast majority of what we need to take back the speakership. So Florida reports early. Jen Kiggins is in a neck and neck race. I would add George Logan in Connecticut and Alan Fung in Rhode Island. I don't know how quickly those results come in, but those are going to be some East Coast races that if they flip, it probably means it's going to be a very good night for Rhode
Island. I can't recall an election where we even paid attention to Connecticut or Rhode Island.
Exactly. I mean, George Logan, we opened an office. The RNC's opened these community centers, Hispanic, Asian, Black. We actually have a Native American community center as well. In these historically Democrat voting areas, trying to take our message to minority voters. And one of our first ones that we opened was in George Logan's district. And I think being there for a whole year from the RNC and then giving these candidates a platform or a building or a place to meet voters is going to be a difference maker.
The other one you mentioned was Rhode Island too. Now, there is a Republican there by the name of Alan Fung. He's a correct former mayor of Cranston, Rhode Island. We have heard his name for 3 months. Why?
One, he's been ahead in the polls consistently. It is narrowing, but he's likable and he's working hard and he's got a great message. And the other thing is the Democrats are being held accountable for what's happening in this country. And I mean, on issue after issue, what the people are talking about is, is my life better off than it was 2 years ago? And if the answer is no, then why would you vote for the people who are in charge? Why would you put them back in office? And that's where you're seeing independents come to our party. And that's where they'll be in play in states like Rhode Island, Connecticut, also in Oregon and Washington State and Illinois. I mean, there's pickups all across the board for Republicans.
The Republican Congressional Committee spent money in three districts that have been off the map for some time. One is in upstate New York, Rochester, New York 25. There's a former police commissioner who's running as a Republican to try and win that race. Crime's a big deal in Rochester. Pittsburgh, which is Pennsylvania 12, and California 26, which is the Los Angeles area. These are deep blue districts. They might be plus 20 Dems. They might be plus 20 Biden, or pretty close to it. Is that a legitimate money spent, or is that a head fake? Is that a head fake this late in the cycle?
I think it is. I think in this type of cycle, if it ends up being a wave, which we're not going to know till everybody goes and votes on election day and goes to GOP.com to find where they need to vote, you're going to pick up seats you didn't expect. And so what we're seeing right now is Republicans are expanding the map and Democrats are contracting, right? So they just pulled out of, for example, or they're limiting their spend in Wisconsin 3, the old Ron Kind district where Derek Van Orten is running, or David Schweikert's district in Arizona that they saw as a potential pickup. You know, Kevin McCarthy, and I got to give him a lot of credit, he has recruited a phenomenal slate of candidates, and he has raised a lot of money that is allowing us to play in districts that you know, a year ago would have been unheard of.
Mm. If you were to throw a dart at the map and say, this is what I'm looking at with keen interest, where would that dart land?
Well, it probably would land right now in Washington State, which we probably won't have results on. But I think Tiffany Smiley is making a run for this Senate seat. And I think if that falls our way, we're winning seats nobody expected. But she's neck and neck with Patty Murray. There's two polls right now having her either one behind or tied. She has taken the Patty Murray phrase of mom in running shoes, and she's adopted it on her own and said, Patty Murray, you are no longer a mom in running shoes. You are a Washington insider, and I'm the new mom in running shoes. And Tiffany is just a phenomenal candidate. I would also say Tudor Dixon. I'm going to watch her because she's from my home state, Michigan.
The issue there is education, is it not?
Yeah, education is the big issue in Michigan. Uh-huh. I mean, Detroit's schools are failed. I'm one of those moms who's mad my son was virtual for a year and a half. It's just really shameful what's happened to these kids. And parents are very angry. And I think that's the undercurrent that's not totally being polled well, because they're not just Democrat or Republican. They're just parents who are very upset about the aftermath of the pandemic and the learning loss that our kids are still dealing with.
Phenomenal. Very interesting. Last question. If this goes the way some people have projected, and it's a blowout, the focus will be on the policies of President Biden and Democrats and what they've pursued. How much thought have you given to how much they would change as a result?
I think that's a question for Biden. I mean, Bill, I think a big part of why people voted for Joe Biden is he said, I'm going to bring people together. I'm going to unite. People are really exhausted by the division, and now they're really suffering. And so, you know, when Bill Clinton lost in that historic election in 1994, he came to the middle. Remember, he went from welfare to workfare. He adopted a lot of Republican ideals because he was repudiated with Hillary Care and some of the things he was pursuing in his first 2 years. So we'll see if Joe Biden will come to the middle. I know that if we win decisively, the American people are saying, cut it out, Washington, get your act together and start working on behalf of our problems and our issues. And I know Republicans are focused on that.
We'll see what happens come Election Day, November 8th. Ronna McDaniel, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform, and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
This is Mark Thiessen with your Fox News commentary coming up.
President Biden keeps warning voters what might happen if Republicans take back control of Congress.
Well, I've come to Florida today to talk about two very, very, very important programs.
He says Social Security and Medicare will be on the chopping block.
You've been paying into Social Security your whole life. You earned it. Now these guys want to take it away. Who in the hell do they think they are? Excuse my language.
It's part of the president's closing argument in the midterm elections, and he followed that event yesterday with what's been rare for him, a joint appearance with Democratic candidates. Republicans say the president is lying because Democrats are failing on the issues, especially inflation.
Biden said that he wouldn't raise taxes on the middle class. But if you're a family right now dealing with the grocery prices and the energy prices, certainly you feel like your taxes have gone up a lot because the cost of living a good life in this country has gone up a lot.
Ohio Senate hopeful J.D. Vance. During a Fox News town hall last night, the Democrat in that race, Congressman Tim Ryan, appearing separately and saying he still thinks the Inflation Reduction Act will help going forward, but he knows it's not providing immediate relief, and he would support tax cuts.
Well, I don't have control over everybody else. I think this is the solution. I've been screaming at Democrats, too, for a year and a half to pass a tax cut. That's the short term.
That race for outgoing Republican Senator Rob Portman's seat is listed as lean Republican in the final Fox News power rankings of the midterms. The forecast shows the Senate still up for grabs overall, hinging on several toss-up states, but the House moving toward a bigger expected Republican majority. For Democrats to keep control, they would need to win all 26 House races considered toss-ups, and six more where Republicans have the advantage.
Well, look, the big picture right now is that Democrats are concerned that there could be a very significant red wave that hits the political landscape where Republicans take back the House with a pretty comfortable majority.
Fox News Radio political analyst Josh Krossauer is a senior political correspondent for Axios.
And that they win the Senate and possibly some of these really close toss-up races break their way in the end. The polling and also the money being spent right now suggests that Democrats are very concerned about races in very blue parts of the country, from California to Oregon to New York. And at the same time, the Senate races that we're watching the most closely, like Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, all look very, very close, margin of error type races where, you know, in a wave, it tends to go one way. It tends to go favoring the party out of power. But look, we're talking about some flawed candidates for the Republicans in these races, and these are very competitive to the very end.
Let's dive in to some of what you said. First of all, in the Senate, those handful of states that have been toss-ups basically all along, those races seem to have only gotten tighter. What is making those states so close?
First of all, a lot of voters who are undecided, who don't pay attention to politics like you and I do, tend to make their decisions very late because they don't follow politics. They're focusing on their pocketbooks. They're focusing on economic issues, and they're not happy with the state of the economy. They're not happy with rising goods at the grocery store, at the gasoline pump. So you're seeing these races getting a lot closer because a lot of these undecided voters are breaking against the party in power. They're breaking against the Democratic Party. And if that continues up until Election Day, that could give Republicans a narrow but significant advantage in their battle to retake the Senate majority.
The final Fox News power rankings for the midterms, not really offering a path for Democrats to try and keep the House anymore, with more of the close races there shifting toward the GOP. Is that mainly about the economy and crime?
It's about a lot of factors, but the fact that the economy's in rough shape, volatile shape, and the fact that, you know, Democrats hold the White House, they hold both branches of Congress. So they're the ones that are viewed by voters as being fully in charge. And with such a narrow majority that Nancy Pelosi holds in the House, it just takes five seats to flip. And when you factor in both redistricting, which may gain Republicans a couple seats, and just the overall mood of the country, it's easy to see how Republicans are heavily favored to win back the majority. I would expect that we'll have an early call on election night on Republicans being heavily favored and maybe accomplishing the goal of retaking the House in 2022.
There's been a lot of talk about suburban women and Hispanics and maybe shifting toward the Republican Party and what issues are moving them. Are we seeing shifts that should be concerning for either party when it comes to those voting blocks?
Yeah, well, we're seeing something of, I don't want to call it a realignment because that's a little too broad for what we're seeing, but we're seeing Hispanic voters, non-white voters, working class voters of all races tilting a little bit more towards the Republicans than we've seen in quite some time. And we all are also seeing the suburban vote had been moving more towards the Democrats. So the upscale suburban vote had become a much more reliably Democratic constituency, though I will say that in this election, Republicans have made a major comeback, so some inroads with independent women in the suburbs. So that was a constituency, but that because of the abortion decision, the Dobbs decision in the summer, those voters tended to lean Democratic. But now they're much more in play, if not already leaning back towards the Republicans again.
Each party accuses the other of being extreme or radical. Is that fear factor making a difference, or were the candidates always considered too far to one side, never doing well in this election cycle? You know, Pennsylvania's Republican candidate for governor, Doug Mastriano, comes to mind.
So I think it's fair to say that being extreme, whether you're a Republican or you're a Democrat, you're paying a pretty sizable political price. So you mentioned the Pennsylvania governor's race. Doug Mastriano is likely to lose that race, and possibly by a pretty big margin, at a time when Republicans are doing well across the board, not just in Pennsylvania, but across the East Coast. So that is an example of someone who's very extreme, who takes positions outside where your average Pennsylvania voter is, who's paying a big price. But and you also see it in Arizona and New Hampshire. These are actually close races, but I think Republicans would be in better shape right now if they had if Doug Ducey was running for Senate instead of Blake Masters, or if Chris Sununu was running for Senate instead of Don Baldock. That said, the Democrats are also paying a price for nominating some extreme candidates or weak candidates in important races. Just look at Wisconsin and the Senate race in Wisconsin, where, you know, Ron Johnson was beatable in this election. His numbers are very polarizing, but Mandela Barnes, the
lieutenant governor has taken positions on crime, has taken positions on policing, has given interviews to Russian television, done things that are just making him very unpopular in the eyes of Wisconsin voters, making him a fairly weak Democratic challenger to Ron Johnson. And he's trailing consistently now in the polls in Wisconsin. You know, Herschel Walker's another example in Georgia where, you know, flawed Republican candidates are putting some seats that shouldn't be close, are now very, very close. But Democrats are also squandering opportunities like in Wisconsin with Mandela Barnes, also in Pennsylvania. That's a very winnable seat for Democrats. But between John Fetterman's health and his own positions on criminal justice issues, he is also putting jeopardizing that seat for Democrats and creating an opportunity for Republicans to hold that seat with Dr. Oz.
What kind of turnout is expected at this point? I know for Democrats, it's especially key to draw the younger voters, the African-American voters. But the Republican Party chair, Ronna McDaniel, has also been emphasizing that get out the vote message.
Yeah, I mean, look, I expect high turnout. We've seen historic turnout in the last two elections. So, you know, it's hard to predict without actually getting to election day, but I would expect higher than average turnout. I think the bigger question is, which party does a better job of turning out their core voters? With Republicans being the party out of power, it doesn't take as much work to get those voters to the polls. Democrats are really, in some states, struggling to get their core voters to show up and prove to their voters that this election really does matter.
How much of an impact can a governor's race have on a tight Senate race, or has that tendency changed over time? You know, are voters more or less likely to split their ticket in this polarized political climate we have?
Well, look, governor's races are the last bastion of partisanship in many ways, and we are seeing voters more likely to be independent-minded when it comes to their choice for governor. The congressional races, which party is going to control the Senate and the House, those are a lot more partisan. They're a lot more ideological. So, you know, you're going to see split ticket votes, but that's nothing that new. Governors have always been seen as separate because they're not in Washington. They're closer to the ground in your home state. Whereas Congress, you know, it's a little more distant. It's a little more abstract. And people tend to, especially these days, tend to vote more on partisan lines than on individual lines.
One quick question for you about surrogates on the campaign trail, because the White House, you know, says the president's been making the case about his agenda. Until recently, though, with candidates, he's been mostly behind the scenes, receptions and the like, while former President Obama was holding the big rallies. You know, is that the right strategy for Democrats? And then on the other side, you've got, you know, former President Trump front and center with a lot of candidates holding a lot of rallies. Does his presence maybe backfire for Republicans in certain areas?
Yeah, well, it's not a good sign when the president of your party is not really welcome in many of these battleground states. I know he's going to be in Pennsylvania this week. He's going to Florida, which, and those races seem lost for the Democrats, so maybe there's not as much risk in Florida. Biden's closing out in Maryland, the deep blue state of Maryland, as his final election, pre-election stop. So, you know, it's the fact that he's not welcome in some of these classic swing states because the Democrats don't think it'll be a drag on their campaigns tells you everything you need to know. You know, Obama may be the most popular surrogate, but he's a former president. He didn't do that well when he was president in these midterm elections. I really don't think he's going to have a major impact in turning out Democratic voters. You know, as far as the Republicans go, Trump is sort of the big wild card. The areas of the country he's going into are more rural, more conservative, more MAGA oriented. He also is not going into some of these classic swing states. So I will say Pennsylvania is one of his stops. And that's a race where Dr. Oz has moved to the middle and moved more to the mainstream in his general election campaign. But he also is going to the second Trump rally alongside a much more polarizing and unpopular Republican gubernatorial nominee in Doug Mastriano. So, you know, that is a risky move for if you're a Republican that's trying to run to the middle of the electorate to be seen with Trump in the final days may help energize your base. And maybe Oz needs the base to show up in a little more significant of a number. But it also risks turning off those suburban swing voters who make the difference in so many important elections.
Last question for you. Is there one race that has surprised you the most leading up to these midterms? Or, you know, is it the climate of the overall election cycle in some way?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's surprising that the Oregon and New York governor's races, Oregon hasn't elected a Republican since 1982. And you have to go back to the Cuomo years to see when a Republican last held a, or Pataki was the last Republican governor. It's been a while since a Republican has held either one of those governor's mansions in these deep blue states. And yet polls and all the reporting I've done suggest that they're both extremely competitive and winnable for the Republican Party.
Fox News Radio political analyst Josh Krosshauer, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks again.
And in other news,
I'm Gianna Gelosi. Air travelers tend to either favor window seats or aisle seats, but one airline is trying to give you a little incentive to sandwich yourself between the two. Virgin Australia launched its middle seat lottery for those who either choose or are assigned a middle seat. Selected passengers on board the airline's domestic flights will have the chance to win part of the $230,000 Australian dollars worth of prizes that are up for grabs, including free cruises on Virgin Voyages, a helicopter, pub crawl, an adventure package complete with bungee jumping and giant swinging and automatic loyalty status with the airline and 1 million points. Virgin Australia conducted a survey earlier this year and found less than 1% of people intentionally select the middle seat as their first seat preference. 62% favored the aisle, 35% favored the window, 3% say any seat is fine by them. The lottery is going to run until April 23rd with a winner selected every week. After the announcement was posted on the airline's social media channels, some commenters agreed that this is a brilliant plan, but others said there is nothing that could ever get them to sit in that middle seat. For the Fox News Rundown, I'm Gianna Gelosi.
New from the Fox News Podcasts Network.
My name is Kennedy, and welcome to my podcast, which will, I humbly say, single-handedly save the world. You're welcome.
It's Kennedy Saves the World. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Mark Thiessen.
What's on your mind?
John Fetterman's painful debate performance has raised a vital question for Pennsylvania voters. Does the Democrat have just speech and auditory processing issues, or did his stroke leave him with serious cognitive impairment? If his stroke damaged his ability to hear and speak but not to think, many voters might not care. After all, if Fetterman were deaf and needed closed captioning to understand what people were saying, or if he had a speech impediment that made it difficult for him to verbally communicate, few would question his fitness for office. But if his stroke damaged his ability to understand and process information and thus make competent decisions about serious public policy issues, that is an entirely different story. Many people have no cognitive complications after suffering a stroke. But according to an article in the medical journal Stroke, quote, more than 40% of stroke survivors are found with cognitive impairment, post-stroke cognitive impairment, or PSCI, sometime after the event. Almost two-thirds of these are affected by mild cognitive impairment, and a meta-analysis showed 10% developed dementia soon after a first stroke, and more than a third had dementia after a recurrent stroke, unquote. There are several clinical tests to determine whether a patient is experiencing cognitive impairment. In 2018, when some were questioning President Donald Trump's cognitive fitness for office, Trump asked his White House doctors to administer a test called the Montreal Cognitive Assessment, which he reportedly passed with flying colors. The test is 30 points and designed to take 10 minutes. A score of 26 or greater is considered normal. 18 to 25 is considered mild cognitive impairment. 10 to 17 is considered moderate cognitive impairment. And a score of less than 10 is considered severe cognitive impairment. There are other cognitive tests Fetterman could take, such as the mini mental state examination or the cognitive assessment scale for stroke patients, which is specifically designed to assess post-stroke cognitive impairments in patients like Fetterman, who appears to have severe expressive aphasia, which is a loss of the ability to understand or express speech. Has Fetterman taken any of these tests? If so, what were the results? We don't know the answers because Fetterman has not been transparent about his condition. He won't release his medical records, which would show the results of any cognitive tests he might have taken. After Trump underwent his assessment, his then White House doctor, Ronnie Jackson, spent nearly an hour taking questions from the media at a White House news briefing. But Fetterman won't make his doctor available to the media. So reporters can't ask what testing did the candidate undergo or ask about the details of his cognitive prognosis. Fetterman has a history of being less than forthcoming about his medical condition. Recall that his campaign waited nearly 2 days after his stroke to say he was in the hospital and weeks to disclose a 2017 diagnosis of cardiomyopathy, another heart condition. Pennsylvania voters are being asked to elect a senator who just had a very serious stroke. They might be willing to do so as long as they can make an informed choice. They have a right to know whether what they saw in last week's debate was simply a man struggling with speech and auditory processing, or whether it was something deeper. If Fetterman has test results showing he has no cognitive impairment, he can easily put to rest any concerns about his candidacy. But if he has test results that show cognitive impairment and refuses to share that information with voters, that would qualify as deception, and that should render him unfit for office, regardless of the effects of his stroke. I'm Mark Thiessen.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.